I'm a Lutheran pastor, presently working at a community called Salishan. For those in the Northwest, I like to keep the images of the two, kinds of seemingly opposing ones, but I would like to say God would have us bring them together. There's the Salishan on the Oregon coast, which is a five-star resort, and then there's the Salishan in Tacoma, which is a Tacoma Housing Authority subsidized living. I often say one is the first resort and one's the last, and in a serious sense, we decide that, don't we? By the way we live, by the way we think, by we see those communities, how we judge them, finally. If I want to bash the wealthy, I'll pick on South Shannon on the Oregon coast. If I'm not particularly happy about low-income people, I could really tear them apart, right? We have that ability. I'm not here to do that, and I hope our sessions didn't do that. And so I would like to use what Bernie Meyer and Kelly Chapman have been using. Paradigms, in other words, models, you know, how you see. I need my chair.
Yes.
My wife is, that's Nancy. Just send them out. No.
There isn't room.
There's no room. Sorry. So, paradigms, what models do you use to see who you see? And I would encourage today. I will throw a lot of things out. I won't encourage you to speak much because any one thing that I say would take the whole period. And I would encourage you to talk to each other. If you're with groups, talk to your groups. And more importantly, I would pray you talk to your God and get back home and do whatever you finally see, if you see differently. I put on the board, finally, just in case I don't get to it, a tool. And it is the best thing I've encountered in my 6 years working with the church in what we call the American poor or low-income community. I ordered 30 copies and never paid for them, and thankfully Jody's a friend and said if you don't have the money, don't pay for it. I gave out all my copies. It is, and I'll show you it and you can look at it, and there's a few, I gave the mapping exercise here, which I'll get into later, but you can get at least a picture of what I'm talking about. So what are the models we use? Well, for those who have been in the Bible study at all, there's a consistent model been used throughout all of history. Bernie Meyer in Bible study use it, the Exodus. The Exodus has been used in every major freedom document ever conceived. They have actually, if you look at it historically, there's a book out called Exodus and Revolution by Michael Walzer. He can document and has done the research to show that the Exodus story has been a model for any, from the American Constitution to the Magna Carta to the our whole country's manifest destiny. And if you look at the picture of the scripture there, it's real simple. There's the oppressed people. Under oppression, you have basically no choice. You are under the people who are in control. And I look at that, you can use that model many, many ways. The next is the wilderness experience. For 40 years, God's people, if you call them that, are in the wilderness. What happens in the wilderness? It's not perfect, but now they're making some choices. They even make a golden calf, which gets finally ground up and they have to eat it. But their idols finally were destroyed and literally made to eat it. Isn't that an interesting image? How I look at that with our pollution and our cars, that the idols that I talked about yesterday, based on health, wealth, and wisdom, when it translates into objects like cars and stuff and garbage, we literally are eating our own garbage. That's what we're doing. And so we say we're polluting the good earth, and now we have eco-justice and all the rest, which is a very good thing, thankfully. And so now you're in the wilderness for 40 years, and now we enter into what? What's the last stage in the Exodus story? The Promised Land. America, of course, has been called the Promised Land. Every group that's come here has been introduced into it through what I call the logic of opportunity. We heard it at the mic today. Here's your opportunity, folks, even those of you who paid to be of service. There's plenty available for you to do, okay? And the logic is if you use your skills and all the rest, that the reward will be there. Okay, there's veggie power, it's holding out the carrot and chase after it. A lot of our social policy, though, zipper's open, is That's how I met my wife, only it was her zipper that was open at the time.
I'm so glad to have this on tape.
They can edit it. They have all the technical capabilities. But I'm off track. The Exodus, the Promised Land, is a very powerful concept. We have promised the Promised Land to every group and every race and every ethnic minority that's been here. And I would only challenge the Promised Land concept only in the sense of how then do we offer that to, is there access to it? And now we live not in a USA-defined area. We live in what? My friend gave me this button. Is he here? California?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there you are. He's from San Diego. He's weird. He's from California. But I like him. He gave me this button. I'm wearing it very proudly today. The Promised Land. I use that model at PLU. The students come from an oppressed minority, their family, where decision making primarily has been done by whom? It may be they had decisions, but let's face it, mom and dad or whoever, guardian, did the decision making. You send them off for 4 years or 40 years to college, and in that institution we say, learn how to make decisions. Okay, they're in the wilderness. And then we give them the Promised Land. Dr. Rieke does it every year. I went through as many graduations as weddings, and I hated them all. But the point was, he got up with his robes on, his symbol of power and authority, and every graduation, you'll hear it, I don't care what university, by the power vested in me. Someone gave him that power. By the state of Washington. You now are all graduates of Pacific Lutheran University. And the immediate response from everybody is what? No, it's not so what. You're a cynic. He's probably a... Who said so what of this?
72.
Hey, 72. That's... Yeah, they scream. They're jubilant. They should be. They've got their... as Eve and I were talking, they're validated. They got the credentials. They go out and meet the world at its own level. I don't know about him, but...
I attack.
Okay. That's a model, okay? And it's a helpful one. You don't have to be Christian or Jewish to believe it. Obviously, a lot of the people who use it for their documents aren't, but it is a powerful metaphor or model, paradigm, from an oppressed state to the wilderness where decisions are being made to finally, now you are fully responsible, young man, young woman, for your fate and your destiny. And then I will specifically then use Romans 12, not as gospel, because it's not, but it's a helpful picture of when we talk about our spirituality. Paul writes, "I appeal to you therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to what? To this world, but be transformed." That word, by the way, is used now by every liberation group I know, from feminists to Central America liberation folks, whoever wants to be liberated, recovery groups, you are going to be transformed. The Christian, this is, and I like it, it's here before they came around. Be transformed by the renewing of what? Your minds. There's no anti-intellectualism here. You have to use the very gift of that, all those brain cells, whether you're right-brained or left-brained, or some people probably no brain, but in, somehow, where to use it, he says, what? So that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. That is what I would be talking about. So when I speak to you, I'm not talking about everything under the sun. I am talking specifically, that's how focused I am when it comes to the word. Be transformed and don't conform to the patterns of this world. So yesterday's session was, how do we get out of the idols in the marketplace? They're very powerful things. And underlying health and wealth and wisdom is power. And if I happen to be the healthy one and the wealthy one and the one with all the data and the wisdom, I mean wisdom as knowledge today of data. And if I have that, what I can do to you is I can control, I can isolate myself. The negative part is we separate and segregate ourselves. And so I never have to look then into the eyes of the poor, those in need, or the creation, if you happen to be creation-centered. And I never have to look at what we're doing. If I have my body and everything is put together well, I jog, I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm white. I mean, I got passage into just about everything under the sun, literally. And I do, by the way. And what do I do with it? Do I say, oh, gee, it's just a waste. I use everything I have in my ministry to penetrate into all the systems or structures of our society. Tacoma Housing Authority, the Tacoma School District. I'm just talking about my community now, not all yours. You think of your own. What other ones? The church? Any other big ones? Metropolitan Parks District? Department of Social Health Services? This one person is impacting, here's how unhumble I am. I consider myself a hero. I think what I'm doing is heroic. I see, now you're getting judgy. You Lutherans in works righteousness, don't get into that. I didn't say I was doing works righteousness, I just said I'm a hero. You want a good model of somebody who's doing something good, you're looking at them. If you want to know another good model, look at Nancy. And if you really want to see the model of who should be heroes and heroines, look at the people from our mission. Why should I be so humble? I'm humble, believe me. Luther was right. We are finally, when you get down to it, we're all beggars. If that's true, what are we talking about, all this independence? Depends from whom? From mom and dad and all their money? If mom wants to give me $5,000, do we take it?
You bet.
You bet I take it. Enough of your independence. And she's going to die. She's 75 years old. What's she going to do with all that money, finally? Challenge my mother? I do. Sure, you sitting there in the bank like our churches, isn't that what we do? We have 750, if you happen to be Lutheran, $750 million sitting in banks in congregations throughout the United States of America. And we don't have enough money to start missions. And I have to beg, steal like Kelly to keep a simple thing like we're doing going, because we can't come up with the money. What a lie. We lie. And I would say, if there's anything the gospel of Jesus Christ through the cross does, just call the thing what it is. Okay, you don't have to give me your money. I don't care if you give me money. But the point is, don't tell me a lie. Don't tell me you can't do it. Don't tell me the church is not empowered. That's a lie. Kelly's calling it a lie in his sessions. That's what he's doing. And then recognize it as such. Is the church... So we have to get away from it. We'll get to the community capacity thing, because the church will sit around, what can we do to make our church grow? And then we look at, we're a needful bunch. We don't have children. We don't have Sunday school. Our music is dead. The liturgy is, jeez. Can't even follow the page numbers last night. No offense against Jane. We can't even tell people. I have to tell them the numbers on top are the one. That's an ethnic thing. Well, anyway, back to the little things of life. So I don't bore you, I'll give these out to you later. This is my multicultural ethnic lollipop. And I realized simple things just like this. I went out to East Wenatchee, pick up my mother, who came here last week, and I said, I'm going to buy a bunch of Mexican candy, because we had Christmas in July here with a Mexican theme. Okay? And I said, a lollipop is a lollipop. And so I didn't read the ingredients. And I bought the lollipops, and I gave one to my daughter. She goes, ugh, sick. Hey, what's wrong with your lollipop? Well, I read the mango part. I didn't know the penchant Mexicans have for chili peppers. But now, this is a lollipop. Don't give it to your five-year-olds, but it's coated with chili pepper. Is it a good lollipop? I want to know. Is it? You may never know because you may never taste it. For whom? For Mexicans? But I love it. I ate one. At first, I had to think, what does this taste like? It tastes like a margarita without the tequila. And then I felt a little better about it. And then I was just hoping somebody would give me a shot, but there's no alcohol up here. Anyway, now isn't this interesting? I'm stuck with 150 lollipops. Because I was not culturally attuned to that fact that local Mexicans in the United States eat these things. Now, our comfort zones are all different. This one is not quite as offensive. It's a caramel one. And it tastes all right. So if you're welcome to these later. But just simple things like that. How come we don't notice them? Is Arlene here? Well, there's a woman here I knew 25 years ago. She showed me her hand. She had a splinter, and she had a Band-Aid over it. She had a flesh-colored Band-Aid over it. Remember, all Band-Aids used to be white. Then we got a little bit more color-conscious, and we had flesh-colored. What color of flesh was the flesh-colored Band-Aids? Well, they weren't white, but they were what?
Beige.
White.
Beige.
They were that beige kind, right?
Yeah, we're all beige.
We're all beige. You ever realize that if I said to Eva, would you like a flesh-colored, and you put it on, it doesn't look like my flesh. Now, if I was a good entrepreneur, I'll go out and develop brown and black and all the shades. Okay,
well,
somebody will
probably. Summertime and wintertime.
That's right. Okay. And I say that, not flippantly, but even from those simplest things, like Band-Aids and lollipops, to get in touch with a new model that maybe these may even be better. Actually, these are. They're pure mango, one of them is, inside with chili peppers. And on a hot day, actually, that makes sense to eat one of those. And not pure sugar. It's a good thing to teach us something. Even a simple thing like a lollipop or a Band-Aid to show what discrimination can be like. Okay? And so then, how do we get into things like community? 25 years ago, there was a man who started a show. He's a former Methodist minister. He still does this silly thing. It's probably the most boring show on TV. Kids still watch it. Yes. Mr. Rogers, describe him. Just describe the picture. Everyone knows it. He comes in without any hype. He's not Sesame Street. He is, pull off his coat, put on his sneakers. And then he sings that little song. It's a beautiful day. Can you imagine some five-year-old hyper kid watching some stupid show like this? You can. They love it. 25 years, never changed it. Yeah, and then they interviewed him on public radio. And the interviewer, it was really a beautiful interview. The guy is very sharp, obviously. He knows exactly what he's doing. And they asked him, why do you think people watch me? And he put it back to, he understands Jesus. He put the question back to the interviewer. Well, why do you think they watch me? Because the interviewer couldn't figure it out, you know. He plays around with these little toys and brings you in his neighborhood and introduces you to the postman. Everybody knows postman. Well, they don't. And he says, that's my friend, the postman. And then, what is his real name? Fred Rogers, right? Yeah, Fred Rogers said, then he finally told him it. He says, well, oh no, the interviewer said, well, of course they trust you. And then Fred just acknowledged, that's right. He doesn't lie to them. He tells them the truth, as he understands truth. And so when he brings in a minority person, he doesn't make a big deal about them being black or Asian or anything. He introduces them as his friend in the neighborhood. And all those little stories that Mr. Rogers so wonderfully teaches. Now, there's a new model for community. I watch it, a lot of you won't. It's called Simpsons. Anybody watch Simpsons? I just want you to give me, not the story, and I don't care what you think about the Simpsons, frankly, but I would like a picture of the opening scene, the very powerful scene. The Simpsons. Then the action starts. What's the action? Anyone who's watched it? You're going to have to think about it. So you're not trained to think. You only look at the stupid thing. And it impresses you. But the point is, if you think about it, it's a very striking image. Dad is working in the nuclear plant. And he's dropping the stuff all over the place because he's the fool in the thing. Mom with her big hair is doing what? Driving around doing all the little driving things women do, right? Pick up the kids, get the groceries. And the little baby is going, mong, mong. And the bright young girl who happens to be, doesn't really fit in. She's playing in the band, and all of a sudden she starts a little boogie and jazzing, right? And the teacher looks at her like, right? And then out walks the daughter, and then Bart, who's obviously the symbol of everything nasty and mean, and everyone loves him, the dark side of us all. I wish we were all Barts.
What side of us all?
The dark side. You, Ted. Light side, excuse me. I caught my own trap.
Somebody pull that spear out of his chest.
I'm bleeding from the hands and the side. No. And then the whole picture zooms in, and they're running, actually speeding. And they come in two different cars, and they come, the garage door pops open, the door opens, they all run out, and they plop down in front of what?
TV.
All the whole family, between which will teach you the gods of our age, in all its multifaceted experience. And then whatever Simpsons does after that. Okay, that's just another model. How do we get into a real community? And I think Simpsons is real. And then I will specifically talk, how does the church do it? I got this before I came here. I actually read it. I don't usually read this stuff from the church, but I read it because I don't know why I read it. Nancy was gone, so I think I decided to read this. It's from the Evangelical Lutheran Church Study Ministry Study Edition Report to the 91 Churchwide Assembly. Whatever it says, this is the part I would like to convey to you. The ministry of the baptized people of God. The whole Christian church in this century has come to a deeper understanding of the ministry of the baptized people of God. Only a few decades ago, the word ministry almost exclusively evoked the image of clergy, the ordained ministry only. Gradually, the term was used to describe work connected to the church. Youth ministry, ministry of lay assistants in worship, so on. Today, the word increasingly includes the worship, witness, and service of all Christians. And then he quotes this. The time has come to make the ministry of the laity explicit, visible, and active in the world. The real battles of the faith today are being fought in factories, shops, offices, and farms, and political parties, government agencies, in countless homes, in the press, radio, and television, in the relationship of nations. Very often it is said the church shouldn't go into these spheres. But the fact is that the church is already in these spheres, in the persons of the laity. That was the revelation I found in my work. We graduate people from PLU, and I found them to be the principals of the schools, the teachers, the judges, the lawyers, name them, healthcare professionals, administrators. And I'm talking about one little city, Tacoma. And I think you could expand that. If you're from Minnesota, you're probably, they're all, it's as bad as the Baptists down south. They're in there. Okay? Therefore, in daily living and work, the laity are not mere fragments of the church who are scattered about in the world and come together for worship, instruction, and specifically Christian fellowship on Sundays. They are the church's representatives, no matter where they are. Now, I didn't know that, but that's what Nancy and I and our group have been preaching for 6 years. And there's not a Sunday that we don't mention that. And I don't mean preachy like that, but just simply acknowledging them in the world, the community. And here's the gospel part of this. Somebody who wrote this did a nice job. Page 26. Clearly a Christian vocation. Now, here's the part. Try to listen to this. Is not identical with what is done for a living. Okay? The call of the gospel is to follow Jesus Christ is not limited to one's work. It is not circumscribed by any stations in life. Stations is class, race, ethnic. This call from God is rooted in baptism and affects who we are. Vocation is rooted in faith in a gracious God, which in turn transforms, okay, there's that word, transforms relationships with others and with the created world. The call of Christ lays claim to all that we are, whether work is meaningful and challenging or boring. Now, here's the part that I underline. The call of Christ lays claim to all that we are, whether work is meaningful, challenging or boring, or even if we have no work at all. Do you know what that means? That means even people on public assistance who do not work for a living and don't deserve an honest day's pay, it safely, you know. They're included in the statement. Vocation empowers the whole sweep of life. It is through vocation that ministry is carried out. Thank you, Kelly. And that's the church. Okay. You can argue with me, but don't now, because we could take forever on all of this. Just something to think about, and you have access to all of this. Here's a picture of when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, of how we were going to bring the church to the people. Isn't this wonderful? Look at this. It's the cross of Christ with what? You see it? You can't
see it.
Somebody describe the cross. What's on it? It's a basketball hoop. And who's standing on the cross? All the kids that play basketball. Okay, let's make this easy, guys. And then, don't make it difficult. It's not supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to be quite clear. Recruiting for Christ. Okay? In the background is the buses. And in the far background is the church. And we happen to know these churches. And by this way, they were not knocking this at all. This was saying this is the way to do it. This was in 1978 or 9, whatever it was. In the richest county in the nation, which was DeKalb at the time. DeKalb County, Georgia. With its pockets of poor blacks who you never even saw. It took Nancy and I a year before we saw, wondering where the blacks were in DeKalb County. I knew they were there. And we couldn't see them. Because in Georgia, somebody's from Georgia here? Bill Posey? There's a lot of greenery like this in Kudzu. It sort of covers everything, unless you have development. And we learned after I would watch, I did see blacks at bus stations. I thought they were just going to work. And it turns out one day I turned off to go into one of these green areas. And lo and behold, the whole community was black back there. And I got scared because they looked at me funny. Because I was looking at them funny. And then I went to Stone Mountain, the real Stone Mountain, not the suburb Stone Mountain. And does anybody remember Martin Luther King's speech? And what did he say? Did he include Stone Mountain in that famous speech? You know who lived in Stone Mountain? It's the headquarters for the KKK in that area. I went in there, white, and I didn't have New York license plates, thankfully. Tell them what I did when I went to Georgia right away. Never did this in my life.
I've never seen you change your license plates so fast.
I went down there and I changed my plates. They were not going to know I'm from New York. White liberal from about the East. Going to change the society. I knew where I was. And when I was in Stone Mountain, I was not very comfortable with my white brothers and sisters. That's just reality checks. Anyway, this is an old model. Maybe some people still want to use this. Hook them in by giving them basketball. Hook them in by busing them. Hook them in into the Sunday school. Instead of meeting them where their needs are and where their gifts are. That's what I like to push. Most of the time, now we'll get into this book. But what did I do with it?
Maybe I put the box in.
I gave you. Do you have your copy?
Yeah.
Can I borrow yours? I don't know what I did with it. Thank you. There should be another copy laying around. I like to suggest this book to you as a resource, as a model, as a paradigm. It's called Mapping Community Capacity. It was developed out of Northwestern University for Urban Studies. John Cressman, or Jody as we call him up here, and his wife have been here many times, Ingrid Christensen. And he and this other cohort in their institute put this together. This is the best, and you don't have to believe me when I say this, but I'm an old teacher, and I seek out whatever I can to find, to help me. This is about the best thing I've seen. They're putting one out for rural poverty also. Now, why this is so good? If you are in a pure, describe a poor community to me, somebody. How would you describe, say, 3,000 people living in a poor community?
A lot of unemployment. Busy food bank.
Keep going. Anybody. Just throw them out.
Single parent family.
Darn single parent. Why don't they stay together? Okay.
A busy WIC program.
Child abuse.
Gangs. Inadequate water and sewer.
There. didn't always live there? What's wrong with that model? It's all what?
All negative.
Yeah, it's so negative that, is it a human place to live? Describe the people in that live there.
Supportive of each other.
What's that?
They're supportive of each other.
Possibly. That's a positive statement. Give me some more pictures of who lives in low-income areas. Describe them now.
Sweet kids.
Sweet kids? Oh, you work there. He does. Rogers, thankfully. Thank you.
Uneducated. Lots of children.
Lots of children.
Frustration.
Fear. Depressed.
Disenfranchised.
Creative.
What's that?
Creative.
Come up with games and support. Yeah.
Did you hear her?
Creative.
Resourceful. Okay. When we take surveys, though, of low-income areas, what's the first thing we usually, though, describe in our mapping? What is a map, by the way, just so we quickly get it? A map is to use to do what? Show us where things are. What else is a map for? Gives direction. Find your way through. What else is a map? It's a picture, right? Okay. In Central America, this is sort of where my beginning of mapping began. In Oaxaca, Mexico, my friend up there again, in Oaxaca, in a dust bowl city, it was kind of like Holden, actually, because there was no stage. It was really that dusty. And I remember it was a Presbyterian church group invited us in for their session they were doing. They invited the children and the adults. They gave them a big piece of butcher paper, and they said, draw your town and put everything that you know in that town on there. And they put every single building, water pipe or absent, you know, and they school, where the police were, they drew it, okay? They made a map. Then the question came as they simply said, where in this town are we facing a problem? Okay? Identify the need. One person said the need was there's not enough water coming to this part of town. The question said, why was not the water coming to this part of town? Well, because on that part of town, the guy who had the well that controlled the water was over there. There's no water over here. Then they went to the Bible. Started to read scriptures. And they would pick out a particular verse. I'll just make my own now. If you're having a problem with Tacoma Housing Authority, you're a senior on fixed income. You're not being treated right by the authority, okay? Will you agree with me? Okay? They're not treating you well, and you're not getting served, and your refrigerator went out 2 weeks ago, and they still haven't fixed it. Now, the picture would be is, the problem is Tacoma Housing Authority. The need is to get the refrigerator fixed. And what would Jesus say about Tacoma Housing Authority? What did he say about the Sabbath? Okay, and we'll be inclusive here. We'll say humankind. The Sabbath was made for humankind. It starts off positively. Not humankind for the Sabbath. Now, I may be charged with heresy someday, but I say to our people, the person with the problem with Tacoma Housing Authority, Tacoma Housing Authority is made for its residents, not its residents for the housing authority. When our school teachers were on strike, either you were one of them, and you too. Civil disobedience, right, in this room. Yeah, they did. They broke the law. Didn't you? Yes, you did. And you allow them to hold them. You'll never get an honorary doctorate from PLU, though. Putthausen proved that. The Archbishop Putthausen was denied a doctorate after the faculty unanimously said yes. And one of the reasons is civil disobedience and saying don't pay your portion of your taxes for nuclear arms. Where did he speak that? He spoke that at a Lutheran convention 10 years ago. And now you're not going to get your honorary degree. The point is, what is the school? Is the Tacoma School District, who's that for?
Children.
Oh, for the children. Not the children for the system. Isn't that interesting? Metropolitan Parks District. Is it really for the people? Isn't it? Isn't what you give your taxes for? Not the people for the parks. But what happens in bureaucracies and people who are in control and in power then?
often they lose sight of that and they become like the Pharisees, Sadducees, who cares who they are? They become the ones who either lord it over them, right? So the model, and that word has to be spoken, by the way. You can't just sit and think about it. You have to say it to them. Now, how you say it to them, meaning Tacoma Housing Authority, is a whole different story. Guess who's working in all those places? We just heard it. Who is in all of those institutions I just mentioned? They don't have to be Lutheran. Well, I'll say Christian for now, even though there's other. We don't want to exclude, and I think rightly so. There are Muslims and Jews and agnostics and Unitarians and whoever also in those systems. But people are probably of goodwill and good intent. And the laity, for now, of the Christian, of the Lutheran Church, that's where you are. So what do? You invite yourself in. You literally invite yourself into the systems. How do you do that?
Go knock on the door.
How do you invite yourself in anywhere? You sort of knock on the door. You go visit your principal, who doesn't want to see you. And the principal at our school happens to be Lutheran. She's the president of Bethany congregation. She didn't tell me that at first. Found out later. And you go in there. You don't try to capture them, become your believers. You're there, what? To help them accomplish their mission. And then you challenge them for their mission. What's the mission of Tacoma Housing Authority? Make sure that you get decent housing. Okay? And you do that with any institution. I would challenge you to do that to any institution we are having a problem with. And do we be as bold? You say, well, you're a clergy. You can do that. If you walked in, why wouldn't you receive the same reception?
Clergy too.
Oh, you're done. It's got to be high clergy here. See, I didn't know you were clergy. If you walked in like that, I wouldn't know who you were. I'll bet, though, if you walked in the Tacoma Housing Authority, you would put your little collar on, a little cross maybe.
If it's going to work better.
Oh, but does it?
It does in some cases.
Some cases.
You have to play the game too.
Oh, see what he said? Do you do it with honesty? I go in like this. Now, my black brothers would never go into a place like this, and they shouldn't, because what will happen if they go in? Say, Kelly, come on up here. You look about as worse as you can for a black
person. Are we a couple?
Should have got bro-eyed.
Yeah. Hey, can you imagine? Are you ELCA clergy? Yeah. We walk in at Tacoma Housing Authority this way. I say, I'm Pastor Ron Vignac, and all of a sudden the door is open. You introduce yourself.
And I'm Kelly Chapman.
Pastor.
I'm Pastor Kelly Chapman.
Oh, my God.
Literally, that's what would happen a lot of times, until they got to know you. My point is, the people I work with who are black in the community, Lou Horton, the Harrises who are here, Dr. Harris came up here, and he wore... except the dish team, I think. He wore his blue pants and his shirt and tie, and we often talk about that. They would say to me, oh, yeah, you can do that, Pastor Ron. You're white. And they're not going to look at you that way. Only when I really want power, when I really want to exert my influence, do I get this. This is an old clergy shirt, by the way. I put this on, I put it in my pants. I even put a jacket on. When I go to court, I don't let my fly open. Unless it's helpful. No.
That's a different game.
It's a different game. Anyway, Kelly, thank you, because the imaging is different for the ethnic and racial people. And it makes a difference how you use that power. I'm a powerful person because I don't threaten anyone in our community, including the gangs. We have gang members that talk to me, all the rest. I know who they are, they know who I am. My van has never broken into. Our building in 6 years has never been touched by anybody, even the graffiti people. There's nothing in the building anyway. But the point is, it's never been touched by the community. And when you go in as a person who's not trying to lord it over the systems, okay, it's amazing. It is just amazing the response you get. When I walked into Tacoma Housing Authority the first time, I didn't look quite like this. And the first response from the people there was, Pastor Ron, we're welcoming you, but You want to realize something, we're not social workers here. We're in the business of housing. And they were on the defense right away. And you should be attuned to that, because anyone will be defensive. They think I'm an agent of change coming in there blaming them. I said, yeah, I understand that. And it was from that kind of relationship you build. That's the transformation. Now, the thing is, the leadership in those places is terribly important. Right now, we have a leader. The first 3 years, we didn't have him. Now we have Bill Hunter, who has given vision to his employees. Our mission is recognized, literally, by the city of Tacoma, by Metropolitan Parks, by the Tacoma School District. Kelly has his letters of, just by doing what you have done, you elicited from the people in power a response, a thanks. The church is probably the only one that hasn't thanked you yet. Oh, serious. And I meant thank them with a salary so we can continue. Mm-hmm. Now we're at the point where we're going to have to start begging. Or we're going to have to leave. And I think if the church leaves there, I'll leave the church. The institution, anyway. Hear that?
Well, just stop paying your pension right now.
Yeah. Terrible thing, my pension payment. As I told many people, my pension and health, statistically, is could support a family of four on public assistance. I haven't even been paid yet. That's how much it costs for us. Okay, that's just the reality. But the mapping, would you look at, some of you have this, just pass it around. This is important. What time is it? Oh, we got time.
11:27.
Oh, we got lots of time. This is so powerful a piece. And I won't go through the book. I suggest you order it. It's $350. It's worth the price just for the maps. He calls, and I'll just read the titles, Traditional Needs-Oriented Solutions, How We Usually Look at Solving Low-Income People is like how we solve people who are fat and we put them on a diet, right? What happens usually? They fail. Because we take people at their worst. They're sick, they're heavy, they're depressed, they're frustrated. That's what Jim Lundy, the psychologist, told us. And we give them now our wonderful diet. Here's your menu. Lose the weight. Okay, we go to poor people and we say, you're a single parent, you're frustrated, get educated. And here's the education program. Take it. And never ask them, do they even want to go on a diet? But we assume they do. Okay. The capacity-focused alternative, which we'll talk about, mapping the building blocks for regeneration. And I'll just go into their explanation. Public institution services, good categories, physical resources. Okay, two community maps. This paper only begins to map the assets that exist in every neighborhood and town. It is a new map that can guide us towards community regeneration. Okay, but there's another map, an old map of neighborhood deficiencies and problems. As we noted at the outset, it's a needs-oriented neighborhood map created by needs surveys. This is a powerful map teaching people in low-income neighborhoods how to think about themselves and the place where they live. This map is initiated by groups with power and resources who ask neighborhood people to think of themselves in terms of deficiencies in order to access the resources controlled by these people, be it housing, education, name them all, healthcare, food, whatever. Among the groups that ask neighborhood people to inventory their problems, needs, and deficiencies are government agencies, foundations, universities, United Ways, and the mass media, and I would include the church. Indeed, the institutions that produce this map not only teach people in low-income neighborhoods that their needs, problems, and deficiencies are valuable, they also teach people outside these neighborhoods that the most important thing about low-income people and their neighborhoods is their deficiencies, problems, and needs. In this way, low-income people helping institutions and the general public come to follow a map that shows that the most important part of low-income neighborhoods is the empty, deficient, needy part. You have a needs map in front of you. You actually said it. Everything you said is included in that map. Now, the genius of this group is, it is true that this map of needs is accurate, okay? But it is also true that it's only half the truth, as some of you folks, Eva and others, were saying. It is like a map of the United States that shows only that portion east of the Mississippi River. The United States is also the portion west of the Mississippi River. And a map omitting the West is obviously inadequate in the most fundamental ways. Similarly, every neighborhood has a map of riches, assets, and capacities. It is important to recognize that this map of the same territory as the neighborhood needs map. That's what's important. It is different because it shows a different part of the neighborhood. But the most significant difference about this capacity map is that it is a map a neighborhood must rely on if it is to find power to regenerate itself. Communities have never been built upon their deficiencies. Holden Village would never be in the shape it is. If, when I was here in 1965, we looked at this place and it was a mess. It was vandalized. Hot water used to come out of cold water faucets. The toilets had hot water in them. This building didn't exist like this. It was deficient. There was no electricity, no phones. See that? People like me came up here, dropout college people. I put in electricity that this place is running, believe it or not. Up in that attic, run the line. Ha, you laugh. Turn on the switch, does it work? Most of the time. Now notice they took away our chimney here. There's something deficient, but just to give you a picture of a community of deficiency, this was it. This place was just a ghetto. It would have been it was a Norwegian ghetto at first, right? And we now have at least moments of color and expression, and celebration, and joy. This is important. Communities have never been built upon their deficiencies. Building community has always depended on mobilizing the capacities and assets of people and a place. This place is a prime example. That is why a map of neighborhood assets is necessary if local people are to find the way towards empowerment and renewal. And this is an example. And I would really encourage the categories. And I'll just end with this. His little legend here lets you find some important things. Primary building blocks, assets and capacities located inside the neighborhood, largely under neighborhood control. That's how Nancy and I work. The people in the neighborhood, not Tacoma Housing Authority. Now, secondary building, assets located within the community but largely controlled by outsiders. Tacoma Housing Authority is controlled totally by outsiders. So is Metropolitan Parks District. So is Tacoma School District. Do you live in these two where you go?
No.
Nowhere near there. Cindy? Eva? Pastor Ron and Nancy?
No.
No. Okay. Last thing, but we're important people. Potential building blocks, resources originating outside the neighborhood controlled by outsiders. Okay. And then give some pictures. PLU. 7 miles away is instrumental to the changes going on in our community. The big change, the paradigm change, is this. When I worked for the last 6 years, I was still thinking we need to cooperate. PLU has to cooperate with Tacoma Housing Authority. If we just cooperate, the new thing, I'm so far behind that it took me, this is what's happening. Structuring interagency partnerships connect children and families with comprehensive services. This is just, we're collaborating now. I never thought I'd see the day when housing is willing to take out a whole street of units and put in there people from PLU, DSHS, Metropolitan Park, actually have them housed right in the community. Actually, they're thinking of it. Who knows when it'll happen and all that? That's another story. But the point is, collaboration. If you're still thinking of just simply cooperate, we can't even cooperate among Lutherans. I mean, how far the church is. Where most of us work, aside from us clergy, people are actually going into these big systems. The other big one would be, anyone here work for corporations? Can you just name them? U.S. West?
Intel.
Intel?
Tektronix.
Any others?
International.
Say that one again?
Picker International.
What does Picker do?
Manufacture X-ray equipment.
Oh, okay.
Realty World.
Realty World. And no Boeing people? Okay. Many of these large, I don't know, you're all large, are now, what are they talking about when they talk about education? They're nervous, of course.
Partnership.
partnerships. We just had a conference at PLU again by invitation, Boeing, Weyerhaeuser, Pierce County, the Mission, and all of Human Department of Social Health Services. None of us can do it alone anymore. That's a myth that always was. And now it's cracking, like the Berlin Wall. It's over, folks. And the lie is out. And now you're going to have to deal with the reality. So what's happening is there's many new models. And all I would suggest to you is try to keep in touch with them. Find it wherever you find your resources. Do any questions on this mapping? Does it make sense to you? Very helpful. It can be used in churches. Here's an example. There was a church in between SeaTac and Tacoma in Burien, okay? A little wonderful church. In fact, the pastor Foss is now in Northfield. That church was struggling with it and said, we need to get youth into our church again, right? You ever hear that? Oh, we need youth, and we need young families, okay? They went through the whole thing, and they looked at their church, and what did they see in their church? No children, deficiency. No young adults, deficiency. No concern for social issues, deficiency. I mean, it was just a deficient of churches. How do you think those Lutherans felt?
Deficient.
That's what you give them. That's what they're going to. And so what happened is they did something like this. They didn't use this particular piece. And they actually went out of the community. And guess what they found when they came back? Were there children in their area? No children. Because they weren't there. They never bothered to look. They never went to the local school to even ask, what's happening to your school? They never went to the park district. Why aren't there parks? Well, you don't need them here. And now, when they do ministry, what will they have to think about? What do they have there? Businesses or industry. Well, you don't have any ministry to industry. Old people. They just didn't acknowledge who was there, what the real need was. And so the church was empowered, that particular congregation, to look differently at the very community they thought they were serving. And they weren't serving it at all. And I think you need tools, though. You can't just do it. And it takes time and it takes effort, and there's where the fun ends. It takes work. And I don't know, you'll have to see where that is in your own life and own communities. Okay? A very powerful piece. This is what I would call not a powerful piece, put out by the Women Leader Voters. This is the old method, though it's a new book.
Do you want to just read the title?
Growing Crisis of Unmet Needs, the Growing Crisis in America.
You know how tired some of us get when we read about the unmet needs? You ever hear compassion fatigue?
Yeah.
That was after all those Live Aid, Band-Aid, Who Aid, to help everybody in the world. And then people started to get tired. I can't face one more disaster in the world. I mean, even the Kurds, it took a long time for us to get the muster energy and finally use the army to solve it. So we're tired. We're not empowered. And I would only say, let's look to the models that give us empowerment and capacity and assets. Okay, now, anyone here from what we would call an affluent suburb? Okay, not affluent. How about a middle class?
Yeah. Okay.
Middle class. Okay. Could you name the range of house price, real estate?
60 to 150,000.
100,000. Yeah, the average new home is about 100,000. But 100,000 to what? To who? 300,000. A lot of money, folks. Yes. Now, if you would just pick, can you picture your communities for a moment, you folks that just answered me? What's the problems in your community?
Really?
Why? Just go there. Let's just show them pornographic movies or something over the top.
They do.
Okay. I just want you to, I did this with a group from Everett, and they were in what they called a middle class or affluent community. And she said, well, we don't have any problems. I said, well, that's interesting then. What do you do? I mean, life must be pretty boring. And then I said, well, do you have police in your community? And she said, I don't know. We use the police. I said, well, if you want to get a picture of what some of the needs in your community are, go to the police and ask what their calls are. If they're not called to do anything, you'll be, get rid of them. Send them to the city where we need them. That's, no, seriously. Get a picture. What do they call police for in Everett or Eden Prairie or Bellevue, Washington, or wherever that, Mercer Island? Okay. Well, you may know that. Obviously, a lot of other people in the community don't. And I would say that about the fire department, health care. Is there a suicide line in your area? You know, all that, rape relief, wherever it might be. Just to get a picture of the own community and its needs. And then if there happens to be a church plopped in the middle, are they serving those particular needs? Again, I'm preaching and I said I would do that. I did. There are other things that are helpful. This came out of the state of Washington. This I do hold up as an example of good work done by committee. It's the Washington State Hunger Report done a couple of years ago. It included the people that they talked to. It moves from just defining the problem to what ways to help it, then legislative action. And then they provided something. This is the hardest thing to do, right? At the very end, they had this little card. And all you had to do was put a stamp on it if you agreed that we needed to be concerned about hunger in the state of Washington. You rip this off, and it goes to Dear Governor Gardner, I support the findings and recommendations of the Governor's Task Force on Hunger. Please help make Washington State a hunger-free zone by implementing the task force recommendations through administrative change, legislative initiative, and advocacy at the federal level. One stamp. But you had to do what in order to send it? You had to learn about it. You had to get involved in an area which may not be your own, but probably is. Okay, this was well done. There are some copies. I'll be happy to give out some of these to whoever wants, if you're really going to use them. But a stamp, very necessary. Last thing, I'll just leave you with the proverb that Chuck Lutz, lay person, has done wonderful work in hunger and other issues. He said, there's the proverb, and politicians use this proverb, only, and church people, they usually only use the first two parts. It's if you're a person is hungry, feed them a fish, and they will eat for a day. Now we do with the Lutheran thing, because we do this well, teach them the fish. What happens? You feed them for life, and most people stop right there. That's what we're good at. What's the third part of the proverb? Anybody know it?
Yeah.
No. We're married. You never know.
I've heard this.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Clean up the water and make space for fish.
See the difference? How do you clean up the waters? It's not just simply a matter of pulling out your personal garbage. That would help. What else would you have to do? Get the Superfund in here and clean up Commencement Bay, which they did, by the way. Right in the back here, 50 yards from here, is what? How is that being funded? Superfund. Why?
For the little town of Holden.
No, it's not for the little town of Holden. What's it really for? It's to prevent the pollution and continued contamination of one of the greatest lake areas in the world, Lake Chelan. Okay, and that money was done. And that was not done just automatically. It took advocacy, it took people speaking for it, it took all kinds of systems. And when the Forest Service comes up here and the federal government comes up here, they all agreed and there's hospitality and we come together.